Hello, everybody. Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 52 for July 30th. Chance Watson and Madison Hardy bring you the news today. And this episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com.
You know, honestly, Chance, I think one of these days we need to time how quickly you can say that.
I can do it really quick, yeah. Honestly.
You've done it really quick sometimes.
I can just burn through it. I'm getting the ending really fast, too. I'm starting to get that down really well. But I could be really honest with myself. I could probably just pre-record that and throw it in. I can't believe I read it every time.
You know, yes and no, I do think you put a lot of personality into it.
Oh, thank you. I have been told by multiple people that I have a good radio voice. I wouldn't know. I can't listen to my voice, but
I hate listening to my voice.
Oh, it's the worst.
I know. I don't understand how people like our voices. I'm glad you guys do.
I very much so.
But I remember listening to my voicemail one time and being like, who's this small child speaking on my voicemail? Oh, it's me.
Oh, I can't tolerate it. It's terrible. Yeah, editing this podcast is like mild nails on a chalkboard kind of thing.
Yeah, that's how I feel when I listen to you too.
That's totally fair. I totally get it, honestly. Okay, so Madison, for our cold open today, I actually wanted to play off of something that Josh and I have talked about in the last episode. We were talking about the Olympics, and we got into a heated discussion about how do you win the Olympics? Now, I understand that at the end of the Olympics, they don't say, like, this country won the Olympics. Like, they do medal counts, and they kind of just, like, present results. Mm-hmm. But we went down the rabbit hole of how do you declare a winner of the Olympics? And we got into the argument of is it overall medal count versus gold medals? See, he was of the opinion that medal count is important, whereas I maybe took more of the harder approach of like if you have 20 silver medals and 2 gold medals, You have 2 gold medals. Like, yeah. You don't, like, 20 silver, then you lost.
You know, my approach to that, kind of branching off of both of those,
okay,
would be that I look at it as the individual sports. You know, say Team USA in the gymnastics, because there's multiple different gymnastics competitions.
Yeah.
One, which I think they got silver this year, but if they took most of the gold medals in that category.
They were
the best at that sport. And then
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And especially since looking at gymnastics, you know, I think there's maybe 6 team members. I'm not 100% sure on that. But if they all got gold medals, that's 6 gold medals in one sport. Mm-hmm. But they could, you know, America's golf team could flop.
Sure.
Absolutely. And so then I think it's more of the all-around winners. I know that, for example, I think it's, I want to say, South Korea has won architecture, like the archery, every year because it's a popular sport over there. They do phenomenally well.
Right.
Of course, they're going to win that category. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, okay, well, maybe they get 10 gold medals or something like that for archery, then it weighs disproportionately.
So
overall, I think plays a part, and maybe you go home and you're the U.S. team and we got 60 gold medals or 60 medals all in all, and then that looks really cool.
Sure.
But in my opinion, it's going to be whatever sport you play and how you play in a specific sport. Because I think the gymnastics competitions are super awesome. I have never watched archery in my life.
You say, like, we're the best at gymnastics and we're best at – okay.
Yeah.
I can wrap my head around that. I thought it would – you know, especially – because if you go off of, like, medal count, like, just medal count, that kind of screws over smaller countries or countries that don't have – that can't field teams for both – for, like, every sport, you know? Like, I mean – you know, more winter sport oriented countries, they're not going to be able to field summer and vice versa. You know, like the Mexico or, you know, Jamaica or Brazil, they're not going to have a lot of winter sports athletes. Exactly. You know, it's just not. Yeah. So that's why I think of, like, you know, if you get a gold medal in those, that's more important to me. And even if you broke it down, like, you could do a point system, I guess. Like, yeah, every gold medal, you get 3 points.
I'm looking at the
medal count.
Medal count right now.
Who's winning a medal count?
China. Well, actually, we are winning medal count.
Okay.
But we're ranked overall number third.
Okay.
China is only one medal behind us, granted, but they're ranked number one.
Is that because they have more gold?
Yes, they have more gold.
Ah, okay. So maybe there is some sort of ranking system.
Yeah, there is some sort of ranking system, but it's one of those things. And then, for example, Japan is ranked second, and they have only 28 medals when the U.S. has 41.
Right.
But they have more gold medals.
They have more gold medals. Okay, perfect. So maybe they do follow that. Okay, awesome. Well, there you go.
There you go.
I laugh at, like, you know, like you said, we have 41. Well, if, you know, 30 of them are silver medals and bronze medals, like, that's not as impressive as if you have 10 gold medals.
See, we're pretty proportionate across the spectrum. Like, we have 14 gold, 16 silver, and 11 bronze.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to our women athletes, because I saw a graphic. It was pretty funny. They were, like, showing, this was, like, day three into the Olympics, so obviously this doesn't count anymore, but, like, the U.S. was leading the gold medal count by, like, 27 medals. And they, like, here's the U.S. and here's the countries below it. And then here's a graphic of if the U.S. women's team was their own country.
Yeah.
And it was, and we were like, still, the U.S. was still in the lead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that our soccer team has done pretty well the last couple of years. Yeah. I know that our gymnastics team has done well over the last couple of years. So it's just, you know, it's the Olympics. It's its own thing.
What's your favorite summer Olympic sport?
I like watching the gymnastics.
Yeah.
Just because the things that they can do are mind-boggling to me. Mm-hmm. I could not imagine propelling myself into the air, backwards, tucking, flipping, four times landing on my feet, and then with a smile. Like,
yeah,
it's not feasible for me. Uh-huh. So I think that's the most impressive to me. Obviously, I don't watch gymnastics basically any other time of the year.
No. Oh, definitely not. And it's, well, and it's hard to, you know, like, how would you even find, like, it's not like ESPN's running gymnastics.
You know, I'm sure they do.
Maybe, but you haven't looked very hard. Exactly. It's like those one days where they pretend, do you ever watch the movie Dodgeball?
Yes.
It's like that one day of the year where they pretend they're ESPN 8, the Ocho.
Yes.
And they have, like, they show dodgeball and table tennis and, like, exactly, really weird sports.
I mean, yeah, table tennis is in the Olympics.
It is in Olympics. Yeah. Yeah. Josh and I talked about, there was a year where they got rid of wrestling for a second, which is weird because that's like the Olympic sport, it feels like.
Yeah. And then there's also, you know, weightlifting, you know, the strength tests that are in the Olympics, which I think are really interesting. But I didn't even know that until, I think it was 2016, maybe, when I really, no, maybe 2012 was the first time I really watched the Olympics.
Oh, really?
It was on the TV.
Uh-huh. Summer Olympics or winter?
Summer.
Summer, okay.
Winter Olympics are really fun. I always like watching the snowboard.
I really love, Josh and I talked about this. I like the one where they ski and shoot.
Yeah, that one's really cool.
He even looked up what the name is, and I still can't remember what it is.
No idea.
That one's really cool. Summer, I would have to say it's a tie between all volleyball and fencing.
Fencing's cool.
Fencing's fun to watch.
It is cool.
It is. It's kind of exciting for sure. But no, all the volleyballs are a blast. I love watching volleyball. If you've ever played,
it's really intense.
Man, you're moving around and you get into it. You know,
they have sand volleyball, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's intense to me.
Yes. Oh, so absolutely.
I think that's really
even
cool.
more so than because you would think that there's a direct comparison to tennis, but I'd rather watch volleyball than tennis.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. Okay. Let's move in to our news for today, Madison. But first, initial success or total failure? Mad Bomber Brewing Company, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. Swing by the brewery to try the freshly tapped Tripwire Red, a beer with the perfect combination of full flavor and light body. Be sure to check out their special events throughout the week, including trivia on Mondays, all-day happy hour on Tuesdays, open mic night on Wednesdays, discounted growler fills on Thursdays, and live music on Fridays and Saturdays. Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide selection of ciders from North Idaho cider for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast when you order to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing, recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho.
I think I personally identify with full flavor light body.
Did you put that on your business card?
Yeah, that's going to be my signature.
Oh, I like that. I like that. I literally just came up with that before this episode. So there you go. But it like Michael Scott does on The Office, like you miss 100% of the shots you never take, Wayne Gretzky, and then below Michael that. Exactly. There you go. All right, let's move into Wednesday, July 28th, headlines for the Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press. Do you have this one, Madison? No, you don't. This is Hannah Neff. I'll take this one. Art lovers, here you go. This is by Hannah Neff. It's described as the biggest arts and crafts weekend in the entire Northwest. Who can argue? The 53rd annual Art on the Green, a gathering of art, music, food, and community, begins today and runs through Sunday on the North Idaho College campus. Piggybacking on the festivities are Tastes of Coeur d'Alene in City Park and the Downtown Street Fair. I was just out there. Art on the Green is free, sponsored by a local nonprofit, Citizens' Council for the Arts. There will be a juried art show judged by three local judges, with entries submitted by artists from all over the U.S., as well as art available for purchase. Quote, "This show is being in its 53rd year has gotten quite the reputation," said Diane Solomon, CCAA president. Quote, "We have artists that look forward to being part of the show. This show. Attendees can view and purchase art of multiple media, including glass, clay, leather, wood, metal, and fiber, while listening to live music performances. There will also be a pottery class where participants can glaze and take home a pot for $20, as well as a children's art garden and scavenging hunt." I can't be giving out too much of that pot. That's illegal here. No? Nothing? All right.
I think I just went deaf from you banging on the table.
Wasn't that loud, was it?
Yes.
We are wearing headphones. In the last 2 years, around $10,000 in art supplies have been donated to local schools. The CCA also selects two art pieces from the juried show to donate, one to North Idaho College and the other to a local school this year, that school being Northwest Expedition Academy. Quote, "It's really nice to have a quality local art event of this caliber that brings in local artists and artists from all over," said Jessica Bryant, a local watercolor artist and teacher from Coeur d'Alene. Quote, "It's a great opportunity for artists to be able to share their work with the public and for local artists to connect with people in their own community." Art on the Green has always been something that has been a fixture of this community for a long time. I don't think it would be summer without it. Mm-hmm. But it definitely sounds like there's a lot of stuff going on this weekend.
Yeah, there's Art on the Green. There is the street fair. Mm-hmm. And then there is the Taste of Coeur d'Alene. I think it's kind of cool that we have all these three going on. Mm-hmm. Obviously, traffic is going to be intense.
Nuts.
But I live in downtown Coeur d'Alene, so I'm just going to walk my happy self over there and enjoy it while I can.
Perfect. Well, I'm just going to avoid going outside altogether, so.
Yes.
Isn't it supposed to be like 100 degrees today?
It is 100 degrees today.
Oh, Madison, I can't handle this. I can't handle it.
According to my watch, it is currently 99.
Okay. Well, you and your watch and all the weather and everything, it can go take a walk.
It's okay. You can breathe easy. It's supposed to be in the 80s next week.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
All right. Unveiling day at the Capitol. This one is by Ellie Goldman Hilbert. A small group from the Satanic Temple, Idaho, gathered Monday for a historic event, the first official Satanic prayer meeting at the state Capitol building. Leading the group of 12 official members was Sean Cobal, the first ordained minister for the Satanic Temple, Idaho, and overseer of all three of the Idaho Satanic Temple regional subgroups. The Satanic Temple Idaho has about 400 members and allies statewide, including approximately 10 here in Cooney County, Cobalt told the press. Though TST members were surrounded by protesters from various churches, the ritual was carried out without incident. Members stood cloaked in ceremonial robes surrounding a large pentagram made of red fabric. Quote, "Today, we too exercise our freedoms granted to us by the Constitution of the United States of America," Cobal said. "We seek your guidance, O Lucifer, so we may treat all citizens of Idaho with compassion and empathy." Cobal obtained the required permits through the state capitol's legislative channels to hold the public meeting Monday in honor of Unveiling Day, which celebrates religious pluralism in America. Unveiling Day marks the Satanic Temple's first revealing of a bronze statue of Baphomet. The oculate symbol depicts a goat-headed winged figure seated on a throne with two smiling children gazing upward. It's close to 9 feet tall and weighs almost a ton. Satanism operates as by a set of guidelines, Cobol said, called the seven fundamental tenets. Briefly stated, they are to act with compassion and empathy towards all living things, to pursue justice, to respect others' freedoms, to conform one's beliefs to the best scientific understanding of the world, to make amends for your mistakes, and the complete autonomy of one's own body. Satanists do not believe in literal Satan, or any deity for that matter, Cobol said. He continued, standard misconceptions about who we are not grounded in reality, he said. We are not killing babies, making ritual sacrifices, or drinking blood.
Well, I'm glad they clarified that. despite what that weird flyer that was in a buddy of mine's mailbox recently that I'll probably be writing a story about later on, that's good to hear. I don't know why this makes me laugh. We had a professional troll, it seemed like, on the Shoshone News Press Facebook page for about a year and a half. They created a fake Facebook page called the Silver Valley Satanic Children's Ministry.
Wow.
But the profile just looked like evil, but all the comments were always very nice and like reassuring. So and that's kind of, I guess that's kind of the mood I get from this. I don't know. If you look at the photo, it just seems like they're having a little fun with it. It seems like,
you know, to each their own, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I said. I
think it'll be interesting to see if this picks up at all here in Idaho. You said there's about 400 members around the nation. Did you say, or the state?
Mm.
Yes, 400 members statewide.
Wow.
So I would love to meet one.
Yes, absolutely.
Get his hot take.
Talk to more. I wonder if there's a North Idaho group.
Well, he said there's 10 in Kootenai County, so
perfect.
I guess we could find out.
Perfect. I'm heading to the next meeting. Not probably not, but
everyone watch out for Chance this week.
No, I probably. You think I'm I can't walk outside. Are you kidding me? Sounds like they're all about like heat and fire and stuff, and that's I'm
fire.
Yeah, it's just not my thing. Not my thing. All right, moving on. A 5-year-old Russian blue wasn't among them. In fact, he was nowhere to be found. Quote, I was shocked, Salgado told the press. The employee was frazzled. He didn't realize the cat was missing before we did. Salgado, a Spokane resident, initially boarded two pets at Paws and Claws before she embarked on her vacation, Smokey and the family dog, where she said had to be picked up early because he was too anxious to come out of his kennel or eat. Smokey, on the other hand, was said to be doing just fine until he disappeared. On Friday, the day before Salgado came to collect Smokey, two women reportedly arrived at the facility with three cats in individual crates. They allegedly said they planned to board their cats in the near future and wanted to see if the animals would be comfortable in the environment. Nobody got their names or contact information, Paws and Claws owner Tootie Gilbert said. One unidentified woman spent about an hour alone in the cat room. She allegedly let two of her cats out of their crates and allowed them to mingle with the other animals, but not the third. Security footage appears to show the woman picking up an additional cat, believed to be Smokey. She then allegedly placed the cat inside the third crate. Salgado said that perhaps the most puzzling part of the ordeal was that no one at Paws and Claws noticed a cat was missing until the following day. In her 12 years of operating Paws and Claws, Gilbert said she has never dreamed a pet would be stolen from her facility. I'm devastated, she said. I can't imagine anybody being so cruel as to do that. Salgado has reported the incident to police. She's also offering a $500 reward for Smokey's safe return.
I do want to let everyone know, as of a couple hours ago, Smokey was found.
Oh, was Smokey gotten back by this individual? Or?
I don't know. We'll have to find out.
Ooh, gotta read that story, yeah. All right, moving on. Thursday, July 29th headlines.
Yep, this one is mine, Madison Hardy, Embracing Birch. Kootenai County Republican Central Committee members unanimously approved a resolution supporting the John Birch Society and will send it forward for possible statewide GOP adoption. Presented by the Idaho Republican Party Region 1 Chairman Bjorn Handeen on Tuesday night, the resolution refers to comments made about the JBS by Kootenai County Commissioner Bill Brooks in a July 10th Coeur d'Alene Press article. The resolution affirms the values of JBS's efforts to restore, quote, the republic according to the vision of the founding fathers. The document also states that KCRCC, quote, urges Idahoans who do not support our political platform to follow the example of Bill Brooks involuntarily disaffiliate from the Idaho Republican Party. Brooks called it a symbol of the KCRC's, quote, extreme right-wing radical push. Brooks said in an interview Wednesday, it says in the resolution that if you disagree with embracing John Birch Society, they invite you to leave the party. I think we should ask every one of our elected Republicans, given that statement, if they are going to be Republicans that support the JBS or disassociate themselves with the radical right-wing group. KCRCC Chairman Brent Reagan spoke in support of the resolution, saying that the committee grew to its present form in part due to the actions of JBS members a decade ago. Reagan also said he, quote, wholeheartedly endorsed the resolution. Reagan said Tuesday that they wrestled control of the Central Committee away from the Rhino class that was marching along in the darkness. The John Birch Society is the intellectual component of conservatism. I fully support them. They are the brain trust. That's why the left hates them. They are the intellectual brain trust of conservatism. But Brooks isn't buying it. He doesn't think that the majority of Idaho Republicans will support the document either. Jacob Collier, the Northwest Regional Coordinator for the John Birch Society, attended the KCRCC meeting Tuesday night. The resolution was a happy surprise for Collier, he said in an interview Wednesday, as they are frequently accused of being a, quote, racist, far-right, anti-Semitic organization. Collier said those accusations stem from an article published by a communist newspaper in San Francisco and picked up nationally by media groups during the 1960s. Quote, still, most people Google search John Birch Society and think those accusations are the gospel truth, Collier said. You'd be hard-pressed to find an organization more maligned than the John Birch Society. Today, Collier said the John Birch Society's agenda advocates against mandatory vaccinations, constitutional conversations, conversions, and President Joe Biden's Build Back Better initiative. Supporting local police, leaving the United Nations, and opposing communist principles have been part of JBS's initiatives since its creation in 1958 during the Cold War. The Benoit County Republican Central Committee also approved a version of the resolution, Handeen said. The resolution has been submitted to the Idaho Republican State Central Committee for possible adoption in its party platform.
Okay. Madison, you have any thoughts on this?
You know, I spent the majority of my day Wednesday talking to people from the John Birch Society, reading things about the John Birch Society, and trying to get a grapple on all of this. Mm-hmm. I personally was not around during the Cold War, so I haven't really watched this organization
develop over time.
Mm-hmm. And I did so much research on it because I felt like I didn't know what the John Birch Society was. Mm-hmm. I had heard whispers. I had heard things that, you know, people had told me about, but I didn't really know what they were. And it was very weird for me personally to be doing research. And as Collier said, if you look up the John Birch Society on Google, you read some maybe unflattering articles about them. Mm-hmm. And then I'm talking to Collier and he says that they are not those things. Okay. So it was interesting. I think that we will have to see where this progresses to. You know, I think if the Idaho Republican Party does unanimously, or not unanimously, but just generally approve to endorse the John Birch Society for our entire state, I think that would be a big leap. But I think we're just going to have to watch.
Does it push them even further to the far right kind of thing?
You know, okay, that's another discussion that they had, according to Mike Satrin, who is a precinct committeeman for the KCRCC. The John Birch Society considers far right as no government at all, and far left as in totalitarianism, communism, socialism.
I don't know if that fits the actual, like, political spectrum.
Yeah, but that's what they said, and then they just believe that they are by the book, constitutional, whatever it says in the Constitution, that is what the JBS follows.
Okay.
So
close to a Constitution party, but probably their interpretation of such. Ah, gotcha. Okay. I can see where that could lead to, because there's a lot of people. There's the Constitution party that says that they just follow the Constitution.
And, you know, this is a group that started during the Cold War and accused President Dwight D. Eisenhower of being a communist. So this is like...
Roots in like McCarthyism.
Yes, they basically... that's them.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. There you go. Well, I don't know. At the time, was it possible that we had Soviet spies in the country? Probably.
Probably still do.
What's that?
Probably still do.
Probably still do. Well, they're not Soviet spies anymore, but... Or are they? No, I'm just kidding.
If you're listening.
All right, moving on.
Yeah, so this one is also mine. Philios Depen's year-old meeting with Dems. So this was actually in the same meeting. It was a great meeting to attend. Commissioner Chris Philios took the floor at Kootenai County Republican Central Committee meeting Tuesday night after a video of the commissioner received negative responses from community members and Chair Brent Reagan. In the video dated July 10th, 2020, Philios addressed the Kootenai County Democratic Central Committee members on various topics, including elections and the Unified Land Use Code. Philios, a Republican re-elected last November, said that in the previous two primary elections, he had received very little support from the KCRCC. Despite lacking that support, Philios won. And during the KC Dems meeting, he stated his suspicion that Democrats likely weighed in on the election. Quote, there are a number of Democrats that are registered and have been registered as Republicans for a long time because they realize they can't elect Democrats. So why not at least get involved in the Republican elections where they can have a voice, Philios said. Reagan said political parties act as a team to, quote, pick its best representative and put that in front of the voters in the general election through primaries in the Idaho election system. By Democrats changing their party affiliation, Reagan said the commissioner was, quote, praising them for, quote, putting on the other team's jerseys, going to the other side, and pissing in their beds. Basically, you're telling them to cheat, Reagan said. During the KC Dems meeting, Philios stated that Reagan has, quote, long advocated that the county should be one zone, a comment which the KCRCC chairman contends he never said. After adopting the Unified Land Use Code proposal in 2012, members in the community, including Reagan, expressed that the new code infringed on property rights and became active in pushing for revisions. Along the way, certain groups encouraged adopting a land usage where government entities did not plan development, but left it to, quote, the free market, Philios said in the video. The video also includes Philios saying groups who subscribe to that one-zone theory have not prevailed because they lack the support of two commissioners. Quote, so far they've been denied that. They have one now. If they get one more, there goes the county, Philios said in the video. Receiving the comment to be directed at the Central Committee, Reagan argued that he has never required an elected official to act on his agenda. Quote, telling them that if Brent Reagan gets one more commissioner, he's going to take over the counties, and that's the end of it, that's preposterous, Reagan said. I believe that you get the good guys elected, and then you leave them alone. There was a lot of other things touched on in this communication. Mm-hmm. The armed individuals that protected Coeur d'Alene during what they thought was going to be an Antifa attack. Yes. There was also discussion about Philios' fellow commissioner Leslie Duncan as being that, quote, they have one now person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of discussion on really hot topic items in the county currently that have more or less formed and become a part of the political conscience over the last year from COVID. I mean, there was mask mandates, there was all these, the optional forms of government commission. These were all things touched on in about 40 minutes. Hmm. And it was interesting.
It sounds like a lot of ground was covered. Boy, Mr. Reagan is front and center quite a lot, it seems like.
We only report what happens.
Mm, that's fair. That's very fair to say.
We don't make things happen.
Yes.
Although I will admit that during the KCRCC meeting, my articles were cited, I think, 3 or 4 times as the reason for a discussion item.
Perfect.
And I want to just note in there that I was invited by Reagan to attend. So
there you go. Nothing wrong with that. All right, moving on to Friday, July 30th headlines. And I just noticed that you wrote both of these too.
Yes. Okay. So this one is Imagine Hayden Rezoned. Again, Madison Hardy. Hayden residents who attended an open house on zone changes left with a different outlook, some more positive than others. Worries about the new, quote, mixed use and mixed residential zones created in the city's 2040 comprehensive plan range from traffic to density and personal impacts. Traffic and Hayden's growth is what brought North Idaho native Hannah McKinley down to City Hall for the open house Thursday afternoon. quote, I think the reason people move here is that we are a peaceful and small town, but it no longer looks or feels like that, McNally said as she looked down at the public comment card in her hands. I think a lot of natives have already left, to be honest. I hear a lot of them are fed up, moving to Montana or the middle of Idaho, which makes me sad. As defined in the plan, mixed use allows for residential multifamily, 4 units or more per structure, and commercial uses. Mixed residential, by comparison, is only 4 housing developments, single, 2 or 3 family designs. Mm-hmm. The 2 new designations allowed the former commercial zone to remove residential, specifically multifamily structures like apartments or duplexes. Hayden senior planner Donna Phillips said to John Scarborough, a 2-year Hayden resident, he fears the zones lead to what he calls, quote, explosive growth. He said, it seems to be that there are no controls, and I realize that's a perception. I just see what's happening on Ramsey and then out on Prairie, and it's everywhere you look. It leaves an impression. Ken Walker and Tim Lawton, who own a complex of commercial and light industrial land with numerous operating businesses, showed up Thursday after discovering their property could be lumped into, quote, mixed zone. If the zone changed, Walker and Lawton feared that they wouldn't be able to operate as they have for 6 years through limitations on what is acceptable land use. Quote, they're potentially taking money out of our pockets, Walker said. We'll hire an attorney. I'm sorry, you're not going to try and take away my possible future income. Much time went into the Imagine Hayden 2040 comprehensive plan, about 3 years, Melissa Cleveland said, who is the City of Hayden's community development director. However, the zone areas haven't been defined yet. They're still in progress, which hence leads to the open house.
Okay.
It's just one of the growth discussions that are just...
One of the many that we've had. Yeah. I did. She mentioned, you know, the small town vibe and locals moving away. I mean, sometimes it's not even their choice. Housing prices are skyrocketing here. It's ridiculous how things are getting more expensive, and costs all over the place. I mean, it's just simple supply and demand. When costs go up, you're going to have to pay more people. So, okay, rates go up, but then, you know, it's this never-ending cycle.
Well, here's the thing. You know, the part of the issue is that we're seeing with, because of the cost, it's supply and demand.
Yeah.
By having almost no housing, any house that goes up can be a lot more expensive.
They can ask for whatever they want.
Exactly. Which is causing the issue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is unfortunate. I thought it was interesting when she said that I've heard many people going to Montana, the middle of Idaho. Well, the middle of Idaho, their prices are increasing too. Montana, same stuff's happening over there. So it's not just us, as much as we sometimes feel like we are just being targeted by this terrible...
Whatever this is, yeah.
...crisis, but it's happening everywhere.
Well, I think on top of it all, everybody's just kind of pissy that it's smoky outside too.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
It's kind of hard to think straight when you're having to deal with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, this one is key to different government, not just efficiency, but cost. I wrote this one, Madison Hardy. Department heads agreed Wednesday that changing the county structure would impact costs more than efficiency during an interview with the Optional Forms of Government Commission. Through a series of interviews and data collection, the study commission is tasked with evaluating if current county operations best serves constituents or if it's time for a change. Phil Ward, a study commission member, asked Clerk Jim Brandon and Deputy Clerk Jennifer Locke their thoughts on about an intermediary administrator, county manager, or executive, and if adding that position would aid in bridging conversations between elected officials. Quote, the simple answer for me is that the continued growth of government costs everybody more money, Brandon said. Now, in the final hours of budget season, County Finance Director Dina DeRose said the board and departments have to provide defined priorities in spending based on a, quote, one pie of resources. She said, we have a small scope of revenue that we can use to perform the mandated services that we provide. That's the biggest thing. We can't choose what we do, and we only have so much money. Government budget processes may not be the, quote, most effective way to decide amenities, Darrow said, but it is directly linked to taxpayers. From her perspective, she sees the system as a suitable control mechanism because of the pressures taxpayer opinion when the official goes up for re-election. Dara said she doesn't know how that would be altered if elected officials become hired, which is an option when changing the government. A concern that changing the county government structure could present added costs to taxpayers has frequently been raised by it in the study interviews. While Darrow couldn't give a definite answer, she said it would be reasonable to assume, quote, if you're going to bring in professional people, you have to pay private sector wages. And Darrow also said, the question then becomes, is our tiny pie of money going to be enough? What was more on Locke's mind was how having five part-time commissioners, which is also another option, and having a county administrator would impact operations. Quote, personally, I would want to be able to talk to a commissioner and explain why this is beneficial to our department, why it's beneficial to the taxpayers directly, and that will require more time for us as department heads, Locke said. Quote, does it improve operation? I don't know. Is it going to cost more money? Yes, she said.
Hmm. Any thoughts on that, Madison?
You know, I just feel bad for the county. Honestly, I spend a lot of time talking to those people over the last year, and they, like everyone else, are suffering by employee shortages, by the cost of living dramatically increasing. You know, they are paying the wages. They're increasing the wages very slowly, but they're not at market value. You could go to literally another city and do the same job and get paid more money. The problem is that you have to be wanting to work. It's that service heart that they're really needing.
Well, there's a demand for services. Like, it's not – this is a situation where you can't – like a restructuring of the county government. Like, maybe a, you know, a corporation or a business can do this to, you know, justify layoffs or, you know, consolidate resources. But when you're a government entity, you can't do that.
And the thing is, too, is that
as more people come here, we've got a more demand for services, and you're going to have – I mean, that puts pressure on every single – you know, water, sewer, I mean, everything, every service.
Well, yeah, and that's it's going to vary. See, the thing is with the county government, it's not like you're going to lose water and those services.
Oh, no,
there
no,
are
no,
services
no.
mandated by the state.
But it makes more people – that you need more people now to maintain it and – put it out more than
and
ever.
It's not really that's not what they're contemplating. They're contemplating if we have a 3-member board of county commissioners.
Oh,
right.
Sure.
So you can eat the per the Idaho statute, you can either have 3, 5, or 7. And if you go to 5 or 7, usually that's part-time. So there's been debates on how that would work. And then another option is that you can have a county manager, a county executive. The manager would be hired, the executive would be elected by the people or appointed by the commissioners, to my understanding. And, you know, that's raised questions because it adds this middleman. You know, what would that mean? You know, if they are not elected by the people, how are they accountable to the taxpayers?
Right.
And then the another option is whether you want to keep the elected officials elected, you know, the sheriff, the prosecutor, the coroner, the clerk, the treasurer, or make some of them, some or all of them, hired based on qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
As I think I've said here on the podcast before, to be the county clerk, to be the county, the sheriff,
yeah,
you basically have to be 18 years old and have lived here for a year.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
I could do that right now. And frankly,
North you could Idaho, legally run for
I
sheriff,
am
yes.
not qualified to be your sheriff.
No.
So and these are all the things that they're weighing.
Sure.
But
we've even talked about this before when it comes to the issue of those types of races becoming partisan.
Well, yes. And
like that's when we've talked about this before is like when like the fact that a county prosecutor or a sheriff or a county clerk could somehow become the fact that they're elected officials and then you take that and they make them partisan like that to me that just blows me away because those are very cut and dry jobs. Like you shouldn't – there shouldn't be – a right or a left lean on that. Like you have a job description.
Yeah. And quite frankly, I'm telling you right now, every single one of those positions is hired because of their party affiliation.
Exactly. And that's sad. Like it shouldn't be that way. It should be like the sheriff. I mean, you come in like he has to enforce the law. Like he doesn't.
He's
set
our constitutional officer. Yes.
Yeah. Like he doesn't set the law. Like that's not his job. He comes in. So it shouldn't matter what his political affiliations are. Same with the county prosecutor. Like the prosecutor is going to come in there. Her job is to put those criminals that were arrested in jail. Like
yeah,
that shouldn't matter left or right.
The coroner who handles dead bodies
Is
an elected position.
That makes me.
And there's no requirement to have any sort of medical background.
That makes absolutely
Thankfully,
no sense.
Our coroner does.
Right.
But he can be 18 years old. 18-year-old person with no medical background sitting in there carving up a body. I'm so sorry.
See, and that's and I understand. I would listen to somebody who has the accountability thing. But at the end of the day, that's I don't know. You could make an argument that then you go to your elected officials that who can control that, and then they can make that decision.
And luckily, the thing is that we do have elections. Obviously, they preach their platform.
Yep.
So obviously, for example, our sheriff, he worked in police departments for decades. Mm-hmm. You know, our coroner, he does have a medical background, mm-hmm. which is we're thankful for. Mm-hmm. But, and luckily, we as the electorate mm-hmm. have this power to educate ourselves right. about who we're electing. Thankfully, they have all turned out to be great people.
Sure. And sometimes, but, especially in this day and age, sometimes lack of experience is sometimes touted as a positive thing. Like they're, you know, that individual's not an insider, you know, or something like that. They're going to bring a fresh new take on something. It's always fun. I've talked about for sheriff in Idaho, because it's an elected position, you don't have to be a cop.
Yeah.
Like you do not have to be a police officer to be the sheriff. You can be an accountant or a former prosecutor. If I'm not mistaken, by law, the under sheriff must be a cop, but the sheriff does not have to be.
Well, yeah, and then there's even like a level of education. I know that Chris Filios, even though you don't have to have a 4-year degree to be a very strong member of a community mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or be intelligent,
sure.
you know, he made the statement in his interview with the Optional Forms of Government that this 3-member board of commissioners that we have is the only board that we've ever had that all had 4-year degrees, mm-hmm. ever. Hmm. And, you know, we have people like Dick Panabaker, who is currently a city councilman in Hayden. He has been in an elected office. He has been county commissioner. He's been mayor of Hayden. He's been city council member for Hayden. He doesn't have a degree.
Right.
And, you know, he's definitely, I kind of see him as like that cowboy who has the biggest heart for the community. But,
of course.
You know, he has this twang everybody, in his voice and he is.
Everybody just, has their different. Strengths. Like you can, yeah. I'm not necessarily, like you're right. The 4-year, like you can make up for not having a 4-year degree in other areas.
Yeah.
For, it definitely doesn't disqualify you. But at the same time.
If you're handling a $109 million budget, I expect you to have some sort of financial background.
Sure. Yep. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. All right. We're going to move into show news press headlines. But first, don't have time to wait in the drive-thru? Try ordering on the McDonald's app and picking up your order without getting out of your car. The McDonald's app is fast, easy, and convenient way to order all of your favorites, including the new crispy chicken sandwiches. Try the new crispy chicken sandwich, the spicy chicken sandwich, and the deluxe crispy chicken sandwich today at your locally owned and operated McDonald's at 820 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it.
Favorite app.
So like I said, that moves us into Shoshone News Press headlines. After I recover from being violently kicked by Madison, not 3-4 minutes ago.
I think I literally bumped you.
Yeah, no.
Maybe grow some.
No problem. Do we have an HR department? I don't think we do, but I'm going to call him.
Okay, he loves me.
Clint. I'll just call Clint.
The best part of whenever we say Clint is I know he listens and I know he laughs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's definitely like, actually, you know what? It could be worse because if he did follow through and getting us those Heelys that we talked about, the kick would have been much more violent. I might have a broken shin right now if you're wearing the Heelys while you did it. Still haven't gotten those Heelys. Get them one day, right? That'll be our raise. It'd be like our Christmas bonus.
I'm nervous. I feel like he might.
You think so? No. I think so. I think that sounds like something he would do. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. All right. Show News Press headlines for Friday, July 30th. We're the last couple of weeks, we're going to start with a wildfire update. This is as of July 30th when we record these. First one off, the Character Complex wildfire burning above just about northeast of Kellogg and just southwest of Pritchard. The Deceitful Fire is currently at 5,045 acres burned and is still 0% contained. The complex itself, the Character Complex, is 6,383 acres burned. That includes the Deceitful Fire and the Pritchard Fire. On the Deceitful Fire, hot temperatures and low humidity and dry fuels are leading to increased fire activity with potential for large fire growth today and tomorrow. Firefighters will continue to secure, hold, and burn out as fire progression dictates along the White Peak Ridge Trail. Crews will work to hold and secure the line from previous burnout operations on Character Ridge. Helicopters are supporting operations with water drops, and air tankers are laying retardant to help reduce potential of southern downhill spread. On the north side, the fire continues to burn towards the North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River corridor between Graham Creek and Cedar Creek. Sprinkler systems are installed beneath the Avista power lines and will be turned on in the areas of approaching fire. Fire crews are staged along the river in the Beaver Creek drainage and in Moon and Montgomery gulches to provide structure protection and initial attack as needed. Crews established an additional helicopter dip site on the south side of I-90 near Moon Gulch, where helicopters will get water. Only positive news on the Pritchard fire. It's 1,338 acres burned, 75% contained. Firefighters continue to secure the edges of that fire, and they're not that one's being wrapped up pretty well. Obviously, the concern is the deceitful fire. Evacuations and closures as of today: the North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River Road, or as of Tuesday rather, the North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River Road and Old River Road from Steamboat Ponds to Babin's Junction are closed to all traffic except for residents and egress in anticipation for the fire that could begin impacting the primary river road with rolling debris. Also, due to the potential fire behaviors expected weather conditions, residents within the Beaver Creek, Dobson Pass, and Coal Creek Pritchard Population Protection Zones remain in evacuation set status. That'd be stage two. Eagle Creek and West Fork Eagle Creek Zone remain in ready status. All area residents surrounding the fire should remain alert for changing conditions and potential fire growth. This is the one that's also been a very primary contributing factor to all the smoke seen in the Silver Valley coming from Kellogg, or in and around Kellogg, well, across really the whole Silver Valley, but primarily from Kellogg. People were freaking out. They saw some smoke rising from the south, just south of town. It looks a lot closer than it is. As of this time, Kellogg is not threatened. Kellogg is not in a set stage of any kind whatsoever. It's still burning fairly significantly away from town. Moving down south into the St. Joe region of Shoshone County, we've got the State Line Complex wildfire update. That complex has burned 4,225 acres and is 3% contained total. Once again, the largest fires in that complex are the Tumbledown Fire and the Dolly Fire. Also, the Simmons Ridge Fire has picked up as well. Other than that, I don't think we have – thankfully, no other wildfires have cropped up in the area since, but we do have – boy, all it takes is a gust of wind or something, and we're right back on top of it. Closures for that area as of July 27th. Shoshone County Sheriff's issued a road closure expansion for Forest Highway 50 from Quartz Creek down to Eagle Creek Forest Road 1214 to the state line on Gold Pass into Montana. Several other emergency closures remain in effect due to increased fire activity on the state line complex. For more information on all of that, just check out these stories. The news press has been posting daily updates from the Forest Service on our website. Just go on there and check those out. All right, checking out our headline on the Friday, July 30th paper for the Shoshone News Press. Blood lead screening set to begin in August. This is by Josh McDonald. Panhandle Health District is set to begin its annual free blood lead screenings next month. The screenings will be conducted at Shoshone Medical Center, where all participating children ages 6 months through 6 years old who live within the boundary of the Institutional Controls Program, or ICP, will be a part of the simple finger prick screening along with a short lead exposure questionnaire. Should the blood sample from the simple prick show a lead level from more than 5 micrograms of lead per deciliter or greater, a blood draw is necessary to confirm. That blood draw can be done immediately at SMC, and should the results mirror the finger prick results, the recommendation will be that the child's physician be notified. Val Wade with Panhandle Health District understands the trepidation that comes with bringing your child in for screening, but stresses the importance of the screening for the safety of the kids and families. Quote, "The only way to identify if a child has been exposed to lead is to test their blood," Wade said. "It's very important to get them tested, especially if they've been recreating along the South Fork of the Coeur d'Alene River or playing in an area that hasn't been remediated." This kind of goes into what you were talking about in your story about the Coeur d'Alene Basin, Madison. Lead exposure can cause severe health problems, especially for young children and pregnant women, and lead screenings are not always included in a child's regular physical. Quote from Wade, "This is just a preventative measure, just like a regular visit to the pediatrician." The free screenings run from August 9th to the 14th, and each screened child also receives $40 for their participation. To schedule your child's screening, please call 208-783-0707 to make an appointment. For those who are unfamiliar, the high lead levels in the area are from the decades of mining pollution that was in the Silver Valley, lines much of the Coeur d'Alene River. A lot of areas have been remediated, but if you go out and recreate in areas that have not been remediated, lead can be found pretty much anywhere near the lake bed or the riverbed of the Coeur d'Alene River. So Madison knows all about that. She She did a very good story recently on that.
Oh, I think
you're welcome. All right, last story on the front page that we're going to talk about. Pinehurst Days turns 50 plus one. This is by myself and Chelsea Newby. The streets of the Silver Valley's third biggest city will be busy with the sound of children's laughter and squealing tires come next weekend when the 50th annual Pinehurst Days celebration returns. Quote, we're calling it a 50 plus one anniversary, which is where the theme comes from, event organizer Jennifer Sieg said. It's a family-friendly theme, and we wanted it to be a golden anniversary. Pinehurst Kings and Lions member and event organizer Bruce Rumpel explains that the three-day event will have activities running from August 6th to 8th. I'm not going to go into all of the events here, but they're all listed out, and you can also find more information on the event at Pinehurst Days Facebook page. Just search that, and you can find everything. But running down real quick, there's going to be everything from, Real Life Ministries will be holding an outdoor showing of Herbie the Love Bug. The original one from the early days. The next day, the main events, there'll be a barbecue competition. Also, of course, the burnouts. It's a time-honored tradition. And then a return of the Comancheros car show that'll be happening on Saturday. So lots of fun that's going on. Oh, and then for kids on Sunday, there'll be a BMX bike race. That's also traditional for Pinehurst Days. So
that is so cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun time. And boy, it's going to be a busy day. Lots of stuff happening on that Saturday. We'll have more pre-op information on that. But as a teaser, next Saturday, in addition to Pinehurst Days, is the mining competition out in Osborne.
Oh, wow.
And the Wallace all-class reunion.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going to be a big weekend.
Yep. Fun fact on that, they're expecting one graduate from the class of like 1936. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy, right?
That is exciting.
That is going to be cool. All right, that takes us out of Shoshone News Press headlines and into the Bonner County Daily Bee headlines out of Sandpoint, starting with Wednesday, July 28th.
Yeah, county orders stop to RV park. This one's by Anissa Keith. A private development at Bishop's Bay is facing a civil lawsuit from the Bonner County Board of Commissioners. The lawsuit centers around the construction of a multi-space RV park and removal of natural vegetation along a section of the Ponderay River without obtaining permits beforehand. The lawsuit was filed against Craig Hermsmeyer, the owner of the property, who was sent two stop work orders by the county earlier this year. The county filed the lawsuit on July 13th against Hermsmeyer when it became apparent that work was still being done on the project. Quote, we're just going to work through things with the court system at this point, said Bonner County Planning Director Milton Allerton. Right now, the request is to have him remove everything. There are permits he can apply for, but it will be pretty extensive. Hermsmeyer's project is missing permits from Bonner County IDL, Panhandle Health District, Army Corps of Engineers, and others, according to the media release from Bonner County on July 16th. The land located off of Camp Pine Road was purchased by Hermsmeyer in December of 2019. The development in question violates two county ordinances, as well as a third against stop orders on the project. The first ordinance concerns the construction of an RV park, which violates the rural residential 5-acre zoning where the property is located. The second concerns the removal of natural vegetation along Ponderay River, which was replaced by a sand beach at the shoreline. Bonner County Code requires 40 feet of natural vegetation barrier without disturbing the non-invasive natural plants that are already growing in the area. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Wow is correct.
Lord.
Well, another RV park. I don't know. It's, I mean, we nowadays, seems like everybody's moving into an RV, so, you know.
Yeah, talk to me after my rent.
Right. After my rent, I might be looking into this RV park. So,
ugh.
All right, moving on. Ready to Celebrate, this by Rachel Sun. Priest River's Timber Days begins today with a cornhole registration at 5:30, the tournaments at 6 p.m., and the Hot Neon Nights car cruise at 7 p.m., sponsored by the Asphalt Angels. Lots of cool names in that first sentence. The event is returning after being canceled in 2020 due to the COVID-19 risk. Because of the cancellation last year, the event will have two residents with the Bull of the Woods title, Shorty Graham, the 2020 winner, and Rick Pettit, the 2021 winner. Gotcha.
Shorty.
The Bowl of the Woods is nominated by members of the community who write in, said Chamber Secretary Annie Sweetman. Most have spent many years as loggers. Traditionally, the Bowl of the Woods gets a spot in the parade and a few gifts honoring them. Quote, they get a nice plaque, she said, and they get the suspenders with the Bowl of the Woods written on the suspenders. That's very cool.
Everything in the story has been great for me.
Yes, it's fantastic so far. Saturday, we'll kick off with a Huckleberry Pancake Breakfast sponsored by the Priest River Lamana Spartan Adult Boosters from 7 to 11 a.m. and a Run for the Berries at 7 a.m. There will also be a Show and Shine car show with registration beginning at 8 a.m. And food booths and vendors opening at 8 a.m. as well as the parade at 11. The logging competition will begin at 1 p.m. with awards for the logging competition and lawnmower races at 4 p.m. In addition to its usual vendors, Timber Days will also be selling Timber Days t-shirts, tanks, hats, and growlers. Full schedule can be found at PriestRiverChamber.com/TimberDays2021.
Sounds like a blast. I love every single thing in that story.
Sounds like a blast.
Yes.
I actually am heading that direction later today, so I might actually go check that out.
Yeah, you want to run for your berries?
Yes, absolutely.
Perfect. Going on to Thursday, local group working to provide produce and meals. This one's by Rachel Sun. A local group of at-home gardeners is working to make sure all their neighbors have enough to eat. 7B Crop Swap, which is nearing completion of its approval as a nonprofit, was started by Tia Hawks in 2018 after she switched from growing vegetables in the Sandpoint Community Garden to her home. Hawks, who had previously donated to the Bonner Community Food Bank, said they were unable to take produce from her own private garden at the time. So instead of letting it go to waste, she started her own page on Facebook, the 7B Crop Swap. Now nearly 500 followers, the group serves the Sandpoint, Bonnes Ferry, and Greater North Idaho community, she said. It's a place where locals can find homes for their overabundance of produce, including corn, tomatoes, apples, plums, jalapenos, and many more, as well as the occasional homemade goods such as soap or candles. Last year, Hawks said they managed to feed roughly 993 people. Wow. During the growing season, Hawks and her two sons, Camden and Hendrick, build around 5 baskets to drop off with community members, though sometimes it's more than that. Often they go to families, seniors who are unable to garden, or a husband and wife new to the area. Christine Curlis, a member of the group who also organized privately to provide Thanksgiving and Christmas meals to local families, said it's important to keep reaching out to people who might need some extra help. In addition to donating produce, she keeps a refrigerator outside her home in Kootenai, stocked with water and snacks for neighborhood children, with a permission from their parents, which she restocks 4 to 5 times a day. Quote, there's a pathway worn in my yard from the children visiting, she said. Summertime, we all kind of forget that families still need some help. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Very, very nice. All right, moving on. Trio hope to spread pro-vaccine messages by Emily Bonsant. Michael McGuire, retiree and North Idaho local, is trying to spread his pro-vaccine message with a World War II-styled Uncle Sam poster. Large red letters read, quote, I want you vaccinated. The life you save may be someone special. The conception of the poster was inspired by what McGuire calls, quote, the ongoing surge of COVID-19. Quote, I hope this poster reminds people of the need to vaccinate, said McGuire. McGuire's friend, Paul Yost, designed the poster, and Andrew Boyd assisted with the computer work. The trio are not affiliated with any organization, nor have they partnered with Rite Aid or Albertsons Pharmacy, who are listed on the flyer. Instead, McGuire said these pharmacies are listed as a resource for locals. To those who are not vaccinated and are hesitant to get one, McGuire asked them to consider getting a COVID-19 shot, adding it helps them and those around them. Quote, please think of others and yourself, he added. As of July 20, 5th, 40.74% of Idahoans received one shot, and 37.16% of Idahoans are fully vaccinated, said USAFacts.com. Bonner County residents have received one dose or are fully vaccinated is 39.86%, said Idaho Division of Public Health. Cases are up this week 31.58%. Testing is up 7.75%. Community transmission level for Boundary County is moderate. Residents with one dose or both vaccine doses is 32.76%, said Idaho Division of Public Health. Of the 5 counties included in the Panhandle Health District, 325 fatalities have occurred due to COVID-19 since June of 2020. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I like seeing all these community initiatives. I think it's greater. I think we always talk about, you know, how local, smaller government's better. Well, I think communities doing the most for their community is always best.
I agree.
All right, going to Friday. BCSO shooting stemmed from canine dispute. This one's by Anissa Keith. A local man has been charged with two counts of aggravated battery in connection to last Friday's shooting in Sagal. Ryan Paul Stanley Daniels, 32, is in custody on a $500,000 bond. According to court documents, Daniels admitted to sheriff's deputies that he shot the two male victims with a 9mm handgun during an argument at the victim's home in Sagal. The argument began over a dog belonging to a third party who witnessed the shooting. It is unknown if the dog was supposed to stay at the victim's house over the weekend. According to Daniels and the witness in statements to the sheriff's deputies, the argument between Daniels and the victims began when one of the victims approached the car Daniels was sitting in. The witness, owner of the dog, got in between Daniels and the victim in an attempt to break up the fight. The second victim, who happens to be the brother of the first victim, joined in the altercation. According to witness statements, they were still in between Daniels and the two victims who were aggressing Daniels. The witness had the car door partially closed on them, which is when Daniels produced a 9mm handgun and, quote, shot around the witness, hitting one of the two victims. Daniels pushed the witness around to the front of the vehicle and proceeded to, quote, unload the clip on the boys, according to the witness statement. Quote, I feel 100% it was self-defense, Daniels told deputies after the shooting. I acted out of fear in the moment. A GoFundMe and meal train pages have been created to support the families affected by Friday's shooting. The GoFundMe fundraising page has raised over $2,000 of its $20,000 goal as of Thursday afternoon. According to updates on the fundraising page, one of the two victims is in intensive care after a bullet, quote, grazed his spine. He's also suffering damage to his intestines. The other underwent an exploratory surgery after discovering symptoms related to an internal bleeding. According to the initial post, both of the victims are fathers and alleges that the three little girls witnessed the shooting.
Oh, what a terrible situation.
That is so sad.
That is awful.
All over a pup.
I guess fighting a weird dog, but boy, what a situation. All right, moving on. We've got Festival Kicks Off Summer Music Series. This is by Emily Bonsant. Several dozen concert goers waited in lawn chairs and improvised seats as St. Paul and the Broken Bones kicked off the festival at Sandpoint Summer Music Series on Thursday. After a year off due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the festival at Sandpoint returned to Memorial Field on Thursday as the Summer Music Series kicked off for its two-week run. Music lovers buzzed with excitement, and couples, friends, and families rolled coolers and carried lawn chairs through the car-lined streets. In addition to a return of music to the venue, the festival also saw added security both inside and outside the venue. Along with Sandpoint Police ATV units patrolling surrounding blocks, fence-like barriers closed off the sideway of Ontario Street outside of Memorial Field. Sandpoint Police patrolled outside the venue and worked with the venue security. There have been added units to the neighborhood to prevent littering and to be on standby in case of an emergency within the venue. Helping move the crowd along were volunteers in orange at the beginning of the enclosure, where they are funneled to the checking station and then into the venue. Festival at Sandpoint, always a fun time.
Yeah, I saw a couple good names on their lineup. I thought about going.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, Pioneer Fire Forces Evacuations in Priest River. This one is by Carolyn Lobsinger. A fast-moving wildfire near Priest River prompted the evacuation of nearby residents Thursday evening. The fire, reported about 1:30 p.m., had burned about 30 acres by 3 p.m., but despite an initial attack, which included air support, the fire quickly grew to about 200 acres by early evening, according to the Idaho Department of Lands. The fire's proximity to Priest River and the residents in the area prompted Bonner County Sheriff's Office to issue an evacuation shortly before 7:30 p.m. Among those ordered to evacuate were residents in the Sadler Creek, Skunk Cabbage, Mundy, and portions of Bodie Canyon Road and Slippery Slope areas due to the fire's proximity. About 8 p.m., the evacuation order was extended to residents along Highway 57, south of Bear Paw Road. NICS alerts were issued to warn residents, and BCSO personnel were going door-to-door to alert. Residents were directed to Priest River Community Church, and those with large animals were directed to take them to Newport Rodeo Grounds. Scott Phillips, Policy and Communications Chief for the Idaho Department of Lands, said that an initial aggressive attack was made on the fire and included more than 50 firefighters who are being supported from the air by three Firebras air tankers and heavy lift helicopter. Ground support includes 10 engines, 4 dozers, water tenders, and an excavator. Tom Flair, Idaho Department of Land Ponderay Lakes Supervisor Area Manager, reported a Type 3 incident management team will arrive to take over the fire at 8 a.m. tomorrow. Type 3 teams typically provide extended initial attacks on wildfires using resources from several organizations with flexible expanded command structure that can accommodate changing fire conditions. Phillips said the cause of the fire is under investigation. While Highway 57 out of Priest River near the Pioneer Fire is currently open, BCSO is asking residents to approach the area with caution and to not stop and take photos or for anything else because of the traffic congestion it causes. Local area dispatch encourages Bonner County residents to sign up for NICSCO alerts online or by texting their zip code to 888-777. For more information on the Pioneer Fire, go to idl.idaho.gov/fire.
Boy, just what we needed, another fire. Because we don't have enough of them already.
I'm praying for rain.
We need it. Or just not 100-degree temperatures. All right, moving even further north to the Bonner's Ferry Herald. Headlines for July 29th. North Bench receives grant funding, purchases equipment. This is by Victor Correll Martinez. North Bench Fire District received more than $15,000 in grant funding to purchase new and protective equipment for firefighters. Where wild and fire danger is at an all-time high, the grants are being put into use immediately to purchase supplies that give firefighters a better chance to mitigate fires. The Idaho Department of Lands issued more than $5,000 to North Bench with the Rural Fire Capacity Grant. The funding allowed for purchasing first aid kits, personal protective equipment, fire hoses, and accessories. Quote, "We are grateful for the funds that we have been awarded and look forward to improving our response capabilities because of it," Gus Jackson, North Bench Fire District Chief, said. According to a news release, the equipment purchases will help with standardized loadouts, firefighter safety, and increased efficiency in the field. Quote, "North Bench Fire greatly appreciates the fact that out of 78 grant applications throughout the state of Idaho, our agency was chosen to receive full funding for our 2021 grant project," Jackson said of receiving the grant from the Idaho Department of Lands. Additionally, the Equinox Foundation awarded the fire district a $10,000 grant to purchase an equipment dryer, turnout washer, and extractor. According to Jackson, the grants allowed the department to expand and enhance its capabilities while also providing essential tools to keep the region safe. Quote, "With prices for everyday items and specialized firefighting equipment on the rise, this yearly grant helps to fill a funding gap that is crucial to keeping our firefighters safe while ensuring that we have the proper tools and equipment for responding to wildland fires, Jackson said. Well, that's good. Glad to hear. Glad they're getting some funds.
We've just been talking about how the fires have been terrible recently. Mm-hmm. If they can get any kind of aid, I think that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right. Man steals construction vehicle, faces grand theft charges. Fantastic. This one's by Victor Crowell Martinez. On July 18th at 6 a.m., Idaho State Police Corporal Shane Grady responded to a report of a stolen D8T Caterpillar allegedly being driven by Boundary County resident Alan Funkhauser. According to the court documents, Trixie Edwards reported the stolen dozer, stating the vehicle was traveling southbound on Highway 95 around milepost 452. Grady activated his emergency lights and stopped in front of the vehicle, blocking the southbound lane. Funkhauser stopped and put his hands up, obeying all commands by Grady, who received backup from Bonner County Sheriff's deputy. Grady began questioning Funkhauser after handcuffing him. Funkhauser stated that he had cut several trees last night near the railroad tracks. Court documents state Funkhauser explained to Grady that the, quote, "Chinese National Aztec Army rose from the dead and attempted to make him a king, saying they planned to kill him." Quote, "Funkhauser told me he took the cat to find the code in the machine to send the Chinese nationals back," Grady said. According to Grady, Funkhauser was visibly nervous and shaking as he explained his story and did not show any signs of impairment. In addition, no contraband was found in Funkhauser's Ford truck parked near milepost 451. Foreman Aaron Gilmert of the construction company said Funkhauser was not an employee or authorized to use a $500,000 cat machine. Damages are still being assessed in the construction area. Gilbert used the cat to grade for a new road section on Highway 95, and the construction company plans to charge Funkhauser. On the way to the booking, Funkhauser explained to Grady how he was concerned about the Chinese nationals who built the railroad and pointed out that the construction crane in Sandpoint had moved and mentioned the pyramids in Egypt. Funkhauser was booked at Bonner County Jail for grand theft charge. He has a prior felony offenses for burglary and possession of a stolen vehicle, which elevate the current offense to a persistent violator.
First off, the Chinese National Aztec Army.
That was the best.
That is very clever.
And then I really enjoy the Chinese nationals that somehow got connected to the pyramids in Egypt.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Like, we're jumping all over the place on this one. So not only did the Chinese National Aztec Army rise from the dead.
Yes.
But they wanted to make him a king.
Yes.
And then kill him.
Yes. And then he was concerned because they apparently built the railroads. And then also pointed to a crane. And then also talked about pyramids in Egypt.
You know...
And I just think we should really be
concerned. We need to take him seriously and need to look into these claims, I think. I expect a follow-up from
Victor. I've never trusted the pyramids in Egypt.
No, never. How could you? How could you possibly? I've never even... You haven't seen them. Have you seen them in person?
No.
I'm not even convinced that they're real.
It's all a mirage.
It could be. It's an elaborate scheme by the Chinese National Aztec Army.
Yes, because the Aztecs were in China.
Obviously. Of course. Absolutely. I mean, if you didn't know that, you come on, sheeple. Pull your head out of the sand.
And on that note,
everybody, thanks again for listening into North Idaho Now. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdalinepress.com, shoshonewspress.com, bonnercountydailybee.com, or thebonnersferryherald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher, please like or subscribe to us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out.
And remember, guys, please watch out for that Chinese National Aztec Army. It just rose from the dead.
You should. In fact, today is probably the best day for also me to plug that you should review. Please leave a nice review for us. It helps us get seen on other places. And if you go to any of the places that sponsor us and you mention us, it's a win-win all around. You'll probably get a discount. We get, mentioned, and the advertiser knows that people are listening. So it's a win all around. So once again, shameless plug for all of that. And we will see you next week.